An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Okay, good evening again. So I believe that we are on, we're still in part four, and we're on chapters 24 to 26. Is that what you think? Yes? Okay. And 24 is how to make your life mature. So that's the kind of thing. How, I don't know what I would say, you know, how to mature your life, maybe, or how to encourage maturity or something that was a little less insistent. And what do you think he's pointing to in this whole section? Part four is practice of creative action. And I don't think he's talking about painting a painting, though it could it be reflected in painting a painting. And he says over and over again that it's about, I'm really paraphrasing, and you can tell me if this is what you got out of it or not. It's about entering into wholeheartedly entering into creating your life by wholeheartedly jumping into the Dharma. Is that okay? Does that like resonate? He says that practice is action, and practice, it is joy, it leads to joy, and I think that's true, but not the kind of joy that's necessarily fun. It's a joy that arises, he says, from egolessness. That egolessness arises simultaneously with the activity of practice. He comes back, you know, just sit. And then expand that out. The word that he mentions one time is shikantaza, which is something that Suzuki Roshi talked about a lot, and it's in Beginner's Mind and in Dogen. Shikantaza, just or simply sitting. No mantras, no visualizations, no counting your breath. Just, there's a trendy word now, presencing. I don't like it. but apparently being present is out of fashion. At any rate, just being here with this body and mind. And the thoughts come and go. You don't get tangled. You don't push them away. Just settle. And then when you do that kind of practice, it does tend to expand out. I mean, I noticed in the check-in, a number of people were saying something about, you know, they're saying, I practice, and then I go out and live my life. It's all practice. It's all practice. Where's your breath? Where's your breath? Anytime. Right now, where's your breath? You don't have to tell me, but just pause for a moment and notice, is your breath more in your chest, more in your belly, somewhere else entirely, in your throat? I don't know. Just being aware of it. And he says that that practice is free from suffering, which is true and can be true. Again, I think that that is not exactly aspirational, because not in the sense of it's never going to happen or something. And it's not always available. I don't think that's to anybody that I know, including the various Zen master types. And we can experience it, and we can come to understand that joy, which I sometimes refer to it as a sort of a fierce joy. So that even in the middle of intense grief or great anger, there is a joy of awareness and connectedness. And just being with it. I'm not talking about punching somebody in the nose, but just being willing to be whatever you are at that moment. Just as if it's easy. It's not easy. But it is free from suffering, in the sense, the distinction that's often made, you know, is that pain is given in your life, but suffering is optional. You know, when we add on to it, when we have ideas about it, when we shame ourselves, or we listen to others, let them shame us, or we feel guilty because we don't feel the right thing. Or sometimes we wallow in it. And we add on to it for whatever, millions of reasons. And that adding on, that suffering. So that egolessness arises simultaneously with activity of practice. And he says that the harmony of the phenomenal world of time, which we create from moment to moment, and that's how what we've been talking about, right? The phenomenal world of time, which we create from moment to moment, the harmony of that with the source of existence, the eternal world of timelessness. When we totally enter into the phenomenal world of time, when we co-create it, when we harmonize with it, dependently co-arising moment after moment, or instant after instant, that's our practice, and that is a living of the fact that there is time, this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment. Time is some way, in some sense, a measure of change. It's how we describe it. And when we are totally engaged, there is a timelessness. Does that make sense? That sometimes if you're really totally engaged, there's not a sense of time. I often say that we live in the relative world, or that our aspiration is to live in the relative world with the mind of emptiness. The bodhisattva mind, I could say. So, chapter 24 is how to make your life mature. I have the same concerns about having it expressed that way. And he refers to the eight consciousnesses and the notion of alaya vijnana. And the eight consciousnesses, the first six are the standard consciousness. You know, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. Six. Then we chant the Heart Sutra, we chant the negative version. It's hard for me to say them without the negative version. And mind is the regular old mind that secretes thoughts. And then there is manas, which is discriminating mind, which is a picking and choosing mind, and is kind of the messenger between the brain that does thinking and the subconscious or unconscious or whatever. I hesitate to use those kinds of words. And alaya vijnana. And alaya vijnana is, in my understanding, usually called the storehouse consciousness. And Katagiri went into a lot of detail about sowing seeds and seeds maturing, seeds and seeds manifesting in the phenomenal world, and then seeds passing away with a perfume back, and then there's a seed. And I don't understand that. And I've asked a couple of scholars, and if I learn something useful, I'll let you know. But it's not really necessary for our purposes. Okay, but just to know that there is this process that goes on, you know, instant after instant, if not faster than that. And I've talked about it a lot of times, you know, the eye makes contact with the object, with the form, and eye consciousness arises, and the information goes to the brain or the mind, and that triggers manas to go to alaya vijnana, and the alaya consciousness, the storehouse consciousness, and root around and find appropriate seeds to mature, and then bring those seeds back, and they mature as your idea of a chair. Right? And we each see our own chair. And every time it happens, of course it does, it has an effect on us. And that's like that impression of the chair is added to your storehouse consciousness also. So that next time you see a chair, you might see it a little differently. Or next time you see that chair that I'm pointing at, which you can't see, but you've all seen them before. Anyway, when you see that chair, you'll have a little different idea about it. So there is this momentum that is developed from that process. And it's not exactly conscious. But we need to, be aware of it. It's one of the things that's really important to be aware of is that you have direct contact with the object, with your eye and your brain and the object and so on. But the only way you know it in any useful way to living your life is at a remove. You see your concept of the object. You don't see the object. not in any useful way. And so one of the things that's useful is to not hold on to our ideas ideas are concepts too. You know, whatever the concept is, not hold on to it so tight. If you understand that you're seeing things at one removed and you're seeing your idea of things, it's very helpful, I think. And life flows better, I think, if we just jump in, just do your life, and not just if you're an artist, not, this is what he said, and if somebody referred to it, I think, last week, not just when you are doing something that's your particular métier, like if you're an artist, not just when you're painting a painting, but when you're sweeping the floor. If you will allow that process of your life to just go on without so much separation, without so much judgment. I think about baseball. I've been watching the World Series because I grew up a Dodger fan. And you've probably heard, or maybe you had, I don't know what your experience of such things is. Hitters talk sometimes about being in the zone, and the ball gets bigger out of the pitcher's hand and it slows down and they can really see it. And they know, you know, depending on which way it's rotating and the way the seams are going and stuff, that's a lot of information to them. And that's not always the case, but sometimes that's the case. And it's also the case for pitchers sometimes. The pitcher for the Rays was in his zone last night, and then they took him out, and that was the end of that. At any rate, I also think about I'll come back to what I was about to say. Come back to the circle of nirvana. The last chapter is the true meaning of effort. And he refers, this is what I think Jody was talking about, he refers to the bodhisattva practice, the no gaining idea practice, the just do it because it's there to do practice, without a lot of judging. And what came out were a couple of things that came to my mind, which is that it felt to me last week, and I've talked about this and I don't remember with you guys, or I know I talked about it with the lawyers. All week last week, I was thinking about what am I going to say in my part of Mel's stepping down ceremony. And I wanted to sort of, I think of it sometimes like this, is sort of like drop it down into to the extent it's mine, into Alaya, and just trust that something would come up, because I could either talk for 2 hours or not at all. You know, it was hard to think, well, what, you know, I had 2 minutes, what would I say? And it kept coming up with this, oh, what am I going to say? Drop it down. Oh, is it going to be good enough? Are they going to like it? You know, is it going to be better than other people's? Or, you know, and I just had to keep letting this stuff go and letting it go and trusting the Dharma and trusting the Dharma. And what I want to say is it wasn't that hard. I was conscious of it, and I knew what I was doing. I mean, in the sense of letting go and seeing, you know, my competitive stuff come up and my neediness stuff come up and my whatever, my daddy stuff, you name it. And it just wasn't that hard to let it go. And I was very pleased. It's okay to be pleased. It's not okay to be proud of it. But I mean, it really was a fruit of practice. And finally, I'd say Saturday morning, it really clarified. Another thing is Jody talked about, not expecting something or not having pride in your work but the sense of not judging, because I talk to you guys and you're so hard on yourselves. And, he talks about finding his glasses on top of his head. So could you just say, oh, there's my glasses, rather than, why do I always do that? I feel so stupid, why can't you, or why don't you wear them around your neck? You're just so vain. I don't know, whatever you would think. What about, oh, my glasses? Or you notice that you've been thinking in zazen. Oh, you don't even say, oh, I noticed I was thinking. Could you just say, oh, and just come back to your breath? What would it be like? And that, I think, is the meaning of effort. But effort, it's part of our mantra in the Zazen Shin poem by Dogen, effort without desire. Effort without judgment, I'd say. And maybe that's a good place to stop. This the circle of nirvana, the changing the structure of time and space, I don't know what that means. And I don't know if I care that much. If you want to talk about it, we can. But I think it may be more interesting just to talk about what I've already brought up. Seems like plenty. We have about 15 minutes. Jody?
So I'm glad you just said what you said, because it raises a question for me that seems contradictory sometimes when I read or I hear, don't think too deeply about what's coming up when you sit in zazen. And my question is, if what he says is true, which is that Zen practice is based on the continuous merging of compassion and wisdom, how do I develop wisdom if I'm not thinking deeply about my life and being mindful, even if it's in zazen? Zazen is everything, whether I'm sitting and staring at the wall or whether I'm doing the laundry, it's all practice, like you said. So there is importance from what I see in thinking about my thinking and becoming aware of that. And that's part of, I think, of becoming self-aware. So I feel like what I just heard was contradictory to what, I guess I'm bumping up against that. So I'm hoping you can tease that out a bit.
I don't think I talked about that just now, but yes, he does say those kinds of things. That's one of the things that, because the wisdom that I believe he's talking about, the wisdom that I'm talking about at any rate, it's not about this. It's about this, and it does develop out of zazen, and it does develop out of noticing. When you sit, if you're paying attention to your breath and your body and your posture and so on, you don't push the thoughts away. So the thoughts come, and mm-hmm. you can't help but notice that there are some of them that evoke emotion, or there's some of them that come, some particular kinds of thoughts that come up a lot, that you have patterns. And you notice what it feels like in your body. If thoughts of jealousy arise, what does that feel like? If anger arises, what does that feel like? And you breathe into it, and in the process, your grasp on these unwholesome thoughts starts to loosen. And you also, you experience in your body and your mind, you experience how they arise, abide and pass away. And that's an example of emptiness. You know, and how something could really be bothering you 1 minute and the next minute it doesn't, or you have pain in your elbow and 5 minutes later you don't, and then a minute later you have pain in your knee. And the things just, you know, things move, things change. And you develop what's called luminous mirror wisdom, which is a kind of wisdom that simply reflects back what it sees without adding onto it. And that's when we talk about prajnaparamita. That's the perfection of wisdom. And we chant about her every so often. And, you know, she's an organ of vision. She has a clear knowledge of the own dharmas, for she does not stray away from them. Or the own dharma of all beings, she does not stray away from it. But basically, and of course, dharmas don't have own being. But we think they do. We give them, we attribute it to dharmas. So we learn to see through that. And that's wisdom. So it's an intuitive and an experiential event. And it's the mind of emptiness, I suppose, which is something I talk about. He doesn't talk about that. But it isn't that you should never think about yourself. And I mean, it's amazing to me that the passage that Kate and I chose that we chant when we do service just summarizes all of this stuff. It's really, we chose things that we thought were representative and useful and whatever, but I'm every time we do it, I'm struck by how apt it is. Anyway, I hope that's useful.
Everything that comes up in sitting for me most of the time is not pain or struggle or difficulty or grief. It's other stuff that I'm like, oh, wow, I have a quiet moment to, then this is coming up to really ponder and think about. And I don't feel it takes away from my practice, but when I hear the message of just sit and just breathe and like let things go, it's like there's some things that come up for me that I want it to be there for a moment so I can spend time with that. And then, I mean, I don't hold it there intentionally, but I'm aware that it's there and I'm aware that I'm there with it. That makes sense. You know, and I don't grieve when it passes or long for it to come back, but yeah.
Well, you have to decide that for yourself. There is something about the discipline of, you know, letting thoughts go. It's also something that comes with practice that for me, I know if it's a different feeling, if it's arising from here, I tend to trust it more, even though it's still just another thought. But if it's coming from here and it's coming from me sort of directing the event, let it go. If it comes from here, sometimes I actually do think about it. But, you know, you really don't need to spend a lot of time with that kind of stuff because you thought it. The insight arose. You had it. And you can let it go and you can think about it another time if that's useful. But you have to, I mean, we don't have thought police around here. So you just have to decide what the balance is. But I just want to say that, you know, the letting go part is really important. Anybody else? Steve?
This is kind of a follow-up from last week, but it also relates to this week because it's pretty well connected. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about faith, and then I wanted to, and last week I talked about how I responded to a passage that said something to the effect, and I'm not going to look it up right now, but it said something to the effect that if you are aware of your body or aware of the present moment, or if you touch, it was more if you touch the present moment, you then become aware of it. And they're not the same thing. There's like a gap, however tiny that is. The way Katagiri phrased it was something like faith arises when awareness comes. And we sort of explored that in class. And I realized that, that's not exactly right. What I'm finding happens when I started to examine this is that faith comes even after that. So there's touching, then awareness. And then when I respond to the awareness by saying, oh, let's try that again. Let's touch it again. And every time keeping equanimity, not saying, I can never touch it, which is actually something I fairly commonly rated myself for. I can't stay with my breath. Mm-hmm. The faith is if I don't, or even if I do berate myself, I let that go and come back to, okay, let's remember the breath. Let's notice the senses. And yet not be attached to being actually touching them and not trying to get something from it. It's hard to explain the more deep I go, but I feel like there's this is really,
Well, it would be very, very helpful to have the passage.
Well, I can find the passage.
Okay, well, see if you can find it in about 2 minutes, or else we can talk about it in Doksan or another time.
Sure, I can probably find it in 2 minutes.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I too have been really loving morning zazen. Just the whole ritual of padding out to my studio and it being dark and looking at the morning sky. And I've noticed that the quality of my sitting is, well, not just during practice period, but recently, I'm not so judgmental as I used to be, like, bad you, you're not following your breath or whatever. I mean, I didn't will it to go away, but it just seems to have gone of its own accord, which is nice. And it makes the quality of my sitting different each day. I do get a little overwhelmed with his, it's like sit in zazen, calm your sixth sense consciousness, and then quiet the egoistic manya's consciousness. And then and it's like, wow, I'm just trying to sit. It's not that direct, I guess. I mean, it's not like I sit there and try and go through each one of those things. But, then he saves himself, too. I mean, he'll go in like this whole long thing, and then he'll say something like, this is very hard, or something brings it back to not this big romantic idea, but this is what we do. And I find that's useful in how he talks about things. Yeah.
Did you find it?
I did. So.
Okay. Oh, you're on Kindle, right?
I'm on a Kindle, so I don't know what page. It's 22% through the book, if that helps at all. sometimes it'll give the location, but I don't want to. I'll go back after I've read this passage and maybe I'll.
The chapter number, because some of them are pretty short.
Well, let me read it first because I'm afraid of losing it. Well, wait, actually, I would lose it. I think if I just hit this back button, I will see the location, which, no, Sorry, that doesn't tell me the chapter. It says location 731, which is not helpful.
So read it.
Yes. It goes, as long as you touch the moment, it's wisdom. When you return to the dualistic side and know that you touched it, it's not wisdom, it's faith. In the dualistic world, wisdom turns into faith. But my paraphrase completely missed out the wisdom part.
Okay. Well, I guess you could say that. I mean, that's what, you know, if I'm saying, you know, you can, all you know is your ideas about chairs. You can't actually know about the chair directly. But in the same part, you have to trust your, you have to trust your ideas of the chair. You have to have faith that you're close enough that if you sat down, you wouldn't fall on the floor. So there's a kind of faith there. I guess that's what he means.
I didn't think that's what he meant by it. To me, I thought it was more that something keeps you going back to practice with being present. I mean, this was in the context of, if anyone's found it yet, and I know it's probably hard in a book this size to just find location 731, whatever that means. Yeah, it, he was, the context was, he was talking about like awareness sort of bouncing from sort of being in the moment to then reflecting, and that you're never really in the moment because you're always reflecting.
Yes.
So so my take on it is that the faith is to, even though you can never be there in the moment, to keep being as present as you can, diving in. And that the faith is what keeps you diving in.
Okay.
Yeah. And well, anyway, for me, that passage and trying to play with it and experience it has done a lot to leave the self-berating behind, which encourages continuing to dive in. Uh-huh. I notice myself noticing my breath or noticing the touch of something or the breeze much more often in the day than before I was practicing with this. So that's where I was going with that.
Okay. Zach, did you have your hands in Gusha?
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems weird to try to be present.
Yes.
It seems like it just sort of happens. I know I've told this story a few times. I'm going to tell it one more time. I was in a vineyard and this bird was stuck between wires, and I stuck a blade of from my shears in and it flew away. And it was just this insane moment that just felt so good. And then it was over. I did notice the bird didn't stop to say thank you, but it was over and that seemed the way it should be. It's just,
mm-hmm.
Didn't really dwell on it. And I didn't think,
you didn't think about it. You just responded and took care of the bird.
Yes. Yeah.
That's bodhisattva activity.
Yeah. Okay. I won't tell that story for a year.
Okay. okay. I want to read you Zazen Shin. The passage that we've been chanting as service, you may notice the second paragraph starts with some dots. That's because I took out that Katagiri referred to Dogen's poem Zazen Shin, because it just, for what our purpose is there, it just was extraneous. But this poem is the point of Zazen, is the poem on which our from which our name comes, and it's on the brochure and so on. So this is, it's not long. And it's page 218 in Moon and a Dewdrop, should you have such a book. The hub of Buddha's activity, the turning of ancestors' hub, it moves along with your non-thinking and is completed in the realm of non-merging. As it moves along with your non-thinking, its appearance is immediate. as it is completed in the realm of non-merging, completeness itself is realization. If its appearance is immediate, you have no defilement. When completeness is realization, you stay in neither the general nor the particular. If you have immediacy without defilement, immediacy is dropping away with no obstacles. Realization, neither general nor particular, is effort without desire. Clear water all the way to the bottom, a fish swims like a fish. Vast sky transparent throughout, a bird flies like a bird. That's what we've been talking about. Does it resonate at all or no? I mean, it's hard when you just hear a poem for the first time.
Well, it makes me think I'm not a bird and I'm not a fish, so it makes sense that I struggle with an idea of that a fish or a bird is doing. I mean, I'm a human being, and so, and I appreciate that I'm not a bird or a fish.
But a human being swims like a human being, or right, walks like a human being, and I guess part of our job is to figure out what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I take a picture of this and send it to you? Yes? Okay. Okay. I'm conscious of the time, so I don't want to read it again. I'll send it to you. And see if it resonates. Me, I almost cried reading this. Okay. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible.